You're listening to Nightmare on Film Street. The current time is 6:66. Traffic is clear ahead from here to the afterlife, but it's hell outside. So, let's give a grave welcome to our hosts, John and Kim.
Hello again, fiends, and welcome to Nightmare on Film Street, the horror movie podcast for the casually obsessed. I'm Kimmy.
I'm John.
And this week, we are headed to the moors. Not the American Werewolf in London moors, or maybe it is the same moors.
I think that is kind of what they're riffing on in the American Werewolf in London. The Hounds of... We are talking about Sherlock Holmes and the Hound of the Baskerville.
From 1959.
From 1959, the Hammer horror version with Peter Cushing and Christopher Lee. The two people you expect when you hear the words Hammer horror. And goddamn, what a cool-ass poster.
Oh, that is a good poster.
And just the lighting in this movie, the tagline's great too, right? The most horror-dripping tale ever written. P.S. Sir Arthur Conan Doyle... He hated all the changes they made to make it more horror-centric. The changes are minor, but leave it up to Hammer Horror to make a banging murder mystery with a dark horror twist, right?
Yeah, because this one is very supernatural. Like, we are leading with a curse. The film starts with ye old establishment of the curse.
Ye old dickhead.
Yeah, basically like Lord Baskerville circa 18 whatever, 1840 or
probably
whatever.
Further back than that, I would think.
1612.
Yeah, that's good.
Is Brom Bones of Sleepy Hollow. And
well,
he's
okay, maybe I hold Brom Bones in higher regard, but yeah, this guy's a prick.
Okay, so he's the Gaston of the town of Readingville, France.
I'll take that.
And him and his chums are just, you know, like singing songs and smacking beers together, Disney style.
Kidnapping ladies,
and being mad when they can't kidnap ladies, and I'm assuming rape and murder ladies.
Yeah, it seems that's a logical conclusion.
So, you know, when a lady runs away from you, you do the only thing you can do.
Release the hounds! Oh, literally. The release is like 100 hounds to get her scent and just find her on the moors.
Yeah, and so then they end up at like the coolest ruins ever. You know, like dripping in Hammer Horror fog and green flowing floodlights.
Oh my god, what is, why is there green light? I don't care. Fucking love it. It looks so goddamn good.
And then he stabs her with like this ceremonial Baskerville dagger.
Clearly a serial killer, right? Like a 1700s serial killer.
Yeah, no, he's evil as fuck.
Yeah.
But it's okay because, you know, he starts a curse and a hound eats him or whatever.
Yeah, the Hound of Hell wolfs him down, kills him. And then, yeah, all of the men of the Baskerville family
have
shit hearts. And for generations, their lives have been claimed by a Hound of Hell.
Yeah, and then that's how we are introduced to this case with Sherlock and Watson, the doctor of the town, I think it's like Dr. Morton or something. We pull out of that story and he's kind of reading a newspaper and telling them the legend of the Baskervilles, because after this, all of the Baskerville men are cursed and they're all going to die on the moors, especially if they go out alone.
A
if they go out with somebody, they're fine though, unless it's a girl they're going to murder.
Yeah, I love that we pull out of this story and he's like, so what do you think of that, Holmes? And Holmes is like, pish posh. What a piece of tripe.
That tale was shit.
Yeah, pretty much. Didn't give a goddamn shit about it. Also, it happens off camera, but the murder that sort of brings...
That's what I'm saying is, so we start with a murder and it's like Uncle Charles or whatever.
Yeah.
Who is the Baskerville that was living in the manor up until this point. He died on the moors and we don't see it. We only hear about it as the doctor is trying to beckon Holmes to take the case and come and investigate.
Also, a murder that happened. We're saying murder, but a death, a mysterious death.
Oh, yeah.
Possibly it was involving
it was 100% a dog ghost that did it.
Yeah, happened on a Friday the 13th. I gotta write this down somewhere. Like, I'm always looking for movies that have a Friday the 13th.
It does.
In them.
June 13th it takes place on. I wrote that down because I was like, Jason Voorhees' birthday.
June.
Yeah.
Oh, fuck me.
Yeah.
All right. Happy birthday, Hellhounds and Jason Voorhees. As classic a setup as you can get for a detective, a horror-themed detective story, right? Like, we have some recurring deaths that are hearkening back to age-old mysteries, and we're bringing in somebody like Sherlock who can cut through the bullshit and see this for what it really is.
Yeah, and I don't think he's, like, entirely on board until he meets Christopher Lee, who is Henry, the nephew, who is the final Baskerville, who is moving into the manor. They meet him, I don't know, somewhere in London. And
they meet him at a hotel. They meet him at his hotel. And he's like, ah, good, the manager of the hotel here. Where's my fucking boot? Like, immediately just starts complaining about shit. He's lost a boot. He doesn't recognize that these guys, Watson and Sherlock, are actually just there to literally save his life. It's
yeah, and it's pretty essentially
funny.
Just like a wool coat off between the three, the entire first scene.
This whole movie is wool. If it's not wool coats, it's wool capes.
Yeah, they are having fashion fights with their jackets and how many pieces they can match to the jacket. I think Watson won when he went out on the moors the first time by himself because he had the pants, the coat, the vest, and the hat was all the same pattern of wool coat.
I mean, I think his socks and his shoes had the same pattern,
probably,
too. And of course, he was punished by falling into the mire.
Whenever they go out, I love their, like, going out outfits because they have, like, a cape on top of the jacket.
Crazy.
And that is the same pattern. This reminds me of, like, the 90s. I don't know if you ever looked at, like, the Sears catalog.
And every
bathrooms
December.
Had so many, like, frills. There was, like, a curtain for the bathtub, a curtain for the curtain.
The doilies.
The curtain for the toilet seat. Instead of having doors under your sink, curtains.
I was literally waiting for a moment to be like, when they decided that we don't like doors anymore and it's just curtains? Bullshit.
That is what, like, Sherlock Holmes fashion is 90s bathroom.
Yeah, add a couple smoking pipes and a snifter of brandy and you're there.
Oh, when Sherlock is like, this is a two-pipe problem.
Yeah, you get out the map while I get the tobacco.
Because you have a living murderer and then you have supernatural murder and that adds an entire layer on top of things. We're hunting after a ghost. Sherlock is, like, packing his suitcase. He's throwing in, like, bones and chew toys and, like, a leash and he's like, we're going out on the town, Watson.
And of course, we've got plenty of great characters just because they're all fucking, like, who can hire a detective like Sherlock? Like, only the rich bastards could do it. It's so many egos, so many personalities. And I think Peter Cushing, my favorite Sherlock Holmes.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. He's so sassy.
I don't know that he really is. He's so prissy. It's the best. But I don't know. It's maybe a controversial thing to say that he's the best one. I think Basil Rathbone is still largely considered. But I know from Sherlock aficionados that Peter Cushing's performance is pretty well respected. And even he was, like, obsessed with the Sherlock Holmes stories. And we did a lot of extra legwork on making sure that this was an authentic Sherlock Holmes performance.
As in just like knowing the character?
Yeah, like he had already read lots of Sherlock Holmes books. He had reread them leading up to it. He made lots of suggestions specifically on outfits. And just, he got a lot of, like, little details that, you know, the Sherlock Holmes nerds would pick up on, but that, you know, you might miss if you're only watching the Sherlock Holmes movies.
That's good, because that's, like, you know, like an actor going into the role of Harry Potter now, you know what I mean? Like, there's a lot of expectation.
Mm.
You have to get the hat just right, like...
The Harry Potter hat?
No, I'm the Sherlock hat.
They tried to take the hat out! He was like, guys, we have to have the hat. And they were like, no, we don't. We want to do something new with this character. Well, and he's like, people will be furious if you don't include that hat.
There's so many expeditions in this one. Like, they're out on the moors every day. They're exploring the mines. They're at the ruins. They're solving murders outside.
So many outfit changes.
There's a lot of trekking.
It looks like it's too cold to go outside. That's my guess, right? Because, like, I wouldn't say this is winter. Like, this just looks like, I don't know,
England?
April. It's June. It just looks like, yeah, it just looks like England.
I love when they're out on the moors, always in the night, but filming-wise, always shot during the daytime.
It's absolute insanity.
They're just, like, turning down the brightness so you can't see the actors at all, but the sky is, like, so bright.
When they get to these ruins, there's an establishing shot that shows, oh my, it is quite dark here at night, and anything could happen, but then, like, you reverse the camera to see the actors years, and the sky is still blue. It's absolute madness.
Well, the ruins themselves, though, consistently dark and gloomy and spooky because it's a set. So
yeah.
It's just the entrance to like a haunted garden. It's so well done.
Mm-hmm.
What I like most about it, even though it's like feels very set-y, is that it has that like forced perspective.
Oh, yeah.
Like especially in the opening sequence when the farmer's daughter is like running around trying to hide from the original Baskerville.
Okay.
There's one moment where she like runs down that like a hill of the ruins to hide behind like a piece of rock.
Oh my God.
And you could tell it's like completely vertical, but it's styled in a way that there's like depth between, like you're running a plane of distance.
Yeah.
And it's barely, it has any depth to it. And I just love the forced perspective of like plays and set pieces.
Yeah. It looks like you're running through a painting.
Yeah. And like nobody would allow or permit anything like that in film today.
No, you do it now and everybody's like, look at this hyper stylized.
Yeah, it's like, oh, harkening back to German expressionism.
Yeah.
And they're like, actually, the only set we could afford was small. It works so well for a Sherlock Holmes story because it's a murder mystery and it's almost like you're paging through like a pop-up book.
Ooh.
Yeah, I love it especially as like the major set piece. Like this is where all of the murders are taking place, especially because it's got like that perfect murder rock for everyone
perfect
to die on.
Yeah, it's like it's just a little bit of a slant.
Yeah.
Everybody can still sort of like on it, but still be, you know, facing the camera.
Yeah, it's like creepy pride rock of Lion King.
Yeah, it is 100% the kind of rock that the druids or whatever would sacrifice people on.
The fainting rock, yeah.
Fainting rock.
You could serve dinner on it. You could
it's
have
a real
sex
multi-purpose
on
rock.
It. You could go to sleep on it. You could go to sleep forever on it.
So many rituals. All right, so Christopher Lee is the is Harvey
Henry. Harvey.
It's a H. Who cares? He's Mr. Baskerville. He's the young Baskerville,
and he's like, I'm just gonna say it. He's so studly in it. He's
very studly.
He's very hunky. He's got great posture.
How old?
Lovely jackets.
I don't even want to talk about the posture that everybody has in this movie because it just makes me feel sad.
Well, Christopher Lee is like 6'27" in these tiny little English concrete homes.
Okay, how old do we think Christopher Lee is in this movie?
41.
He looks way older than that. He looks like he's like approaching 50 almost, right? And maybe it's just the clothing. Maybe it's the
hair.
No,
I think he's young hot stuff in this.
I am looking. This movie came out in 1959. Assuming they shot it in the same year. He was born in 22, which means he was 37.
What?
Yeah. They all look so much older.
How old is Peter Cushing? You're like 35.
Can you imagine? Peter Cushing.
Same birthday.
Born in 1913. And yeah, Peter Cushing, Christopher Lee, Vincent Price are all born.
Within a day of each other.
Yeah, like within 48 hours, they all kind of share a birthday. Obviously various years. Yeah, but Peter Cushing, born 1913, would have been 46 when this movie came out.
That's fair.
Yeah.
But yeah, Christopher Lee is a stud in this.
The wool coats are doing a lot
and
of the heavy lifting.
He's a very interesting character because he's such a stoic guy.
Mm.
And you can't kind of get a read on him because he's a descendant of Brom Bones, right? Like, he's a full baddie. Like, we don't like the Baskervilles coming into it. But then, like, Christopher Lee is the only Baskerville we have in present day. And you're like, I don't know. Maybe Apple does fall far from the tree.
I know. And he doesn't.
We have to protect his fragile heart.
His fragile heart. I know he's kind of walking around me like, yeah, they're all pricks. What's up with that, right? And he's polite, but he's not the same type of person that the Baskervilles were. And even when, like, the bishop comes around.
I was going to say, he gives the bishop shit for the rummage sale.
Yeah.
He lets him have sherry.
Uh-huh.
He's such a generous man.
But he's kind of just like, I don't get the impression that he's going to live there forever, you know? Like, he's probably just going to tidy up some affairs and go back to Johannesburg.
Yeah, I'm assuming he's just like, yeah, I'm going to sell all this shit.
Maybe, yeah. Like, he's inherited it. I don't think that's the kind of thing that you sell back then. You probably just keep it in the family forever.
Yeah. He might just go live there. Like, we don't really know a whole lot about him.
Yeah.
He just seems kind of like blank slatey.
A little bit.
Which is kind of hard to take on because normally Christopher Lee, like, he's got such a commanding voice and such a great widow's peak to be a Dracula that you kind of want to put him in a villain role, but it's so hard in this because he's like kind of a decent human being.
And this is an early Christopher Lee role as well, so it's not as though you're watching this as an audience member. Yeah,
like you don't have a lot of anticipation. Yeah, yeah, no, I'm watching it retrospectively.
Yeah, I mean, I think at least his first Dracula movie had come out before this. Also, this movie, Hound of the Baskerville, directed by Terrence Fisher, did a lot of Hammer horror movies, including a handful of those Dracula movies with Christopher Lee, some of the best ones, and The Curse of Frankenstein, where Peter Cushing is the doctor and Christopher Lee is the creature. I think that might have been the first time that they worked together. We have that on VHS over there somewhere. We've got a lot of weird VHS tapes that we've just acquired over the years.
Christopher Lee had the height and posture to be Frankenstein, so I'll permit it.
Sometimes, I'm not gonna lie, I missed entire conversations because I was watching everyone's posture. I could not believe it.
You were doing that and I was getting lost in the jacket.
Yeah. And neither of us heard anything about what was going on. I'm like, this is the posture of a person who has never hunched over a cell phone for 17 hours a day. Oh, God. Good looking movie. The other classic thing that you gotta have in your murder mystery movie, especially if you're dealing with a supernatural villain, is an escaped convict.
Oh,
you gotta throw that in the mix.
I'm gonna be like, social inequality.
Yeah, no, absolutely. Especially with murder mysteries and definitely with stories of inheritance. You're gonna need it.
Well, so you absolutely know going into this that the motive is gonna be about money because we have Charles dying and all he's left behind him is a will, and he left money to his doctor. He left 40,000. He left 5,000 or 1,000 to his loyal servant, the Barrymores. Mm-hmm. And then he left, obviously, his nephew, everything else, which is like £1 million, which back then was like 600 million pounds.
Uh-huh.
So you're like, okay, so somebody's not in the will that wants to be. A ghost, obviously.
Of course.
Or somebody didn't get what they expected, which is why I think the main suspect and where the movie is really pushing you towards is like Dr. Morton, because he's kind of like a douche.
A little bit. Which is silly, because he's the guy. I mean, like, obviously you suspect the person who's hiring the detective. That's always a good move. I think he's just a bit of a douche because Sherlock doesn't want to believe in the Hound, you know, because he's just like, what do you think of that, Sherlock? How are you going to beat the devil dog? And he's like, what are you talking about? This is clearly a human being. Who's
not really, though, because like they're out on the moors and Sherlock is like waxing poetic about how evil is out tonight. And he's just like, is so much evil I must defeat.
Yeah, but I don't think he means supernatural
evil. He's quite
evil.
Ambiguous, though, just in case.
He is doing some, like, real hyperbolic statements that, like, there is more evil here than in any case I've ever solved in my entire life. You're like, okay, so there's two people? Like, is that what you're saying? Like, is it just a quantity thing?
Well, you kind of mentioned this, and I kind of steamrolled you for some reason.
Yeah, sure.
Where you were just like, also, there's a serial killer running around,
oh,
and
yeah.
There totally is.
Yeah.
And it's like, a minor plot point.
Like, he might as well have a hooked hand, right? Like, if he did, this would just be, like, the best urban legend you'd ever heard in your entire life.
Absolutely. The fact that, it's not more of a scary... Like, there's a escaped convict who is a known murderer, and he is out on the run. Everybody thinks he's on the moors, but all anyone's talking about is the ghost dog.
Yeah.
Nobody's like, watch out for that convict out there on the moors. They're like, don't go out there alone. There's a ghost dog.
A convict who is a murderer.
Yes.
You know, and is living in the woods like a madman. I think he's escaped from a psychiatric facility or whatever. So definitely the known quantity you should be scared of. Like, the moors themselves are already dangerous.
Yeah, because there's like mud puddles everywhere that'll just eat you.
Yeah. Goddamn. Like, there is, I mean, if you're of a certain age, you've watched a lot of movies growing up with the expectation that you might one day have to survive quicksand or bog water. And I always love it when I see it. We don't have it in movies anymore. No one's afraid of quicksand. There are no quicksand traps. The fucking Dune came out. We're about to have like 18 more Dunes. I guarantee there's no quicksand in any of those either.
Mistake.
So people are so desperate to kill Henry Baskerville that
we're throwing tarantulas at him, we're doing everything we can.
We're throwing tarantulas. We didn't even talk about that. when some, like, when this escaped convict manages to get some of Henry's clothing because of that rummage sale, he's murdered immediately.
Yeah.
So, like, whoever the murderer is, whether it's a hound dog or not, clearly has a plan.
Hound or human?
and is willing to break that plan and just, like, be opportunistic and kill him the moment they see him.
Yeah, I love that Watson and Sherlock, I keep wanting to call him Shakespeare. I don't know why.
Hilarious.
My mouth is failing me. But when they're out on the moors and they discover the body, one, it's, yeah, sure, it's in his clothes, but it's like 4'2". And they're like, oh no, he's dead. And Sherlock throws his coat over him and then they rush back to the Baskerville house. And then he goes to the servant, Barrymore, and he's like, fetch us some ropes and all kinds of shit. We have a body out there. And then when they find out it's not actually Henry, it's just the serial killers and wearing his clothes, they're like, oh yeah, no, we don't need to go out tonight, we'll go out tomorrow.
Yeah, forget that.
Fuck that guy out there.
not the man who's technically employed us. We could leave that body alone.
It's on ice, it'll be fine.
If you felt stuck trying to lose weight, you're not alone. Enter Weight Loss by Hers. It's designed to support you in reaching your goals. And Hers now offers access to an affordable range of FDA-approved GLP-1 medications, including the Wegovy pill and the Wegovy pen. With Wegovy at Hers, lose up to 20% or more of your body weight when combined with diet and exercise. It helps you regulate your appetite, eat less, and keep weight off. Plus, Wegovy is the first GLP-1 available in a pill, so there are no needles needed. Everything is 100% online through Hers. You'll connect with a licensed provider who will determine if treatment is right for you. If prescribed, your medication is delivered right to your door. No insurance necessary. And it doesn't stop there. Weight Loss by Hers goes beyond medication by offering access to 24/7 messaging with your care team and tons of in-app lifestyle and nutrition tips like recipes, meal plans, fitness videos, sleep content, and more. Even better, with a range of affordable GLP-1 options, Hers makes it simple to find an approach that fits your needs and your budget, if eligible. You'll get a treatment plan personalized to you and unlimited dosage changes as needed. It's weight loss designed to work with your life. Ready to reach your goals? Visit forhers.com/women to get personalized, affordable care that gets you. That's forhers.com/women. Forhers.com/women. Weight loss by Hers is not available in all 50 states. Wegovy is the registered trademark of Novo Nordisk AS. To get started and learn more, including important safety information, Wegovy clinical study information, and restrictions, visit forhers.com.
It's a little silly to me, especially when we get to the end of the film and, like, we discover who the killer is.
But we haven't even talked about that entire, like, line of people. There's like, a farmer and his daughter who also live on the moors, and the land sucks, and they put all their money in it, and they move from Spain, and everybody's unhappy, and the daughter's got one move. She just runs away from everyone when they ask her questions.
Yeah, pretty much.
Or she kisses them and then runs away.
I mean, you know.
She says all of, like, four words to Christopher Lee.
And he is in love.
Smitten.
Yeah.
Smitten. He's like, well, you're the only girl I've seen in a 4-mile radius, so... And we have carriages or walking, so guess what? You're gonna be my wife now.
Yeah. There's also the bishop, who's just sort of a drunk bumbling
A potential
fool.
Love interest?
Yeah, as a potential love interest. I mean, he's got nothing but sherry, but the thing is, he's also an entomologist.
So I love him. He's such a silly goose.
He is great. He's in a million movies. You'd recognize his face right away. I mean, a million movies if you watch old movies. If you were born a grandfather, then you recognize his face. He's in Peeping Tom. You like Peeping Tom?
I do like Peeping Tom.
There you go. Looks a lot like Don Knotts, to be perfectly honest.
Yeah.
But is not, and is drunk in this whole movie. The reason he is potentially a suspect is just that he's got the
rare tarantula that tried to kill Henry.
Exactly, the rare tarantula that tried to kill Henry at the beginning of the movie in the hotel, which we kind of glossed over, was a tarantula of his that he had lost. Somebody clearly stole it, smuggled it into his hotel room, and was hoping that he might get bitten by it and die.
And then everybody would think, because he came back from South Africa recently, that he just, like, brought a tarantula home with him.
Yeah. The real trick to killing these Baskervilles seems to just be getting them scared or getting them to run.
Which makes so much sense for the modus operandi of the murderer to be a ghost. You just gotta spook him to death.
Well, that's what makes it look like a ghost killed you. Like, if you can just die with, like that's your face. Like, oh, like everybody.
Well, the coroner's like, well, he died of a fright.
God, honestly, I hate to say it to you here on the podcast because you're the one that would have to be dealing with it. I hope that's how I go.
We call those heart attacks now, John.
Well, goddammit, I want to go back to the 1800s where I could die of fright.
Oh, yeah, she died of the vapors. She kept saying she was ill, but she was hysterical.
Yeah, don't you wish? Little toe tag says scared to death. Amazing.
Yeah, that would be cool.
Yeah.
Just if you ever have a heart attack, just be really, really, really determined and leave your mouth open and your eyes wide just in case you happen to die. And then don't let anybody find you so you can go into rigor mortis.
Yeah.
And then you'll look petrified.
Okay. So live fast, die young, leave a spooky looking corpse. That's what I'm hearing.
Yes.
So Christopher Lee and the entire Baskerville line have shit hearts because I assume inbreeding?
Bad people.
Because they're bad people. They have bad hearts because of guilt for generations of awful behavior.
Mm-hmm. It's got to be something genetic, though, because isn't the big reveal that there's like a genetic hand disfigurement?
Yeah, which is a little loose. Like there's like, he had webbed fingers.
The signature tiny ring finger, middle finger, contrarium.
He looked like he had burns from the war.
And
like,
some webbing.
So, like, that's what stopped him from being able to use a gun was the thing, right? That's why he had all the traps out on the moor instead of using a gun to kill animals humanely, according to Watson.
Watson fucking loves his gun.
I mean, he's got this teeny little derringer that he takes out all the time.
It's Watson's love interest in this movie.
Yeah. It's the kind of gun you would buy a child. But yeah, he pulls it out at the drop of a hat, like the sound of like somebody whispering in another room. He's like, better get out the old little 1 millimeter. I don't know anything about guns.
It shoots like the things in those like pop guns.
Yeah, like a little cork.
No, like those little like firecracker things.
Oh, sure.
You know, like boys always shot at girls. And we were like, we hate you.
Yeah, I own one of those and you hate it.
We hate you.
I bought it for a Halloween costume and it scares the shit out of you even now.
I hate it.
Okay, look, so there's a lot of investigation going on. We're trying to like figure out where the hound is coming from. We're trying to find the ghost. Clearly he's got an apartment somewhere. We think he's living in the spooky mine. There's a moment where we think that the mine has collapsed and killed Sherlock, but it turns out that he's just hanging out on the carriage waiting for them to carry him back home like the little Queenie is.
Waiting like a magic trick. He's like, oh, I've been here for at least 20 minutes, you fucking idiots.
Yeah.
Now take me home. I'm cold and a little hungry.
Yeah. Actual dialogue from the movie. Like if you may have never seen this movie before, but I guarantee you Peter Cushing is your spirit animal. The lighting in the end of the movie, like when we finally get like our big villain showdown. It's pretty fucking incredible.
Did we get confirmation? This is Technicolor, right?
I mean, I didn't look it up, but I think it's Technicolor.
Just based on her dress in the finale.
Yeah.
That purple fucking dress. The costumes in this are so good. And I just fucking love Technicolor. We never should have got rid of Technicolor. I don't care about accuracy.
No.
I want everybody to have like pink and lime green shit. I don't care.
This is what I'm saying. Black and white movies, Technicolor is the way to go because it's not reality. Like, it shouldn't look real. Mm-hmm. It should look totally fake. I think it's why we all like German Expressionists and stuff. And I think it's why...
And White Christmas.
And White Christmas, sure. I think movies should look fake is the other thing. But there's also a sliding scale. Or not a sliding scale, but like there's
CGI.
There's a cutoff. Yeah, exactly. It shouldn't be bad CGI. Well, bad CGI gator fake is actually kind of perfect.
Okay, so CGI is only permitted when it's used ironically.
I don't know if you guys have seen this movie or watched the trailer, but for the love of God, go to YouTube, type in bad CGI gator. I guarantee it's going to be the movie you watch with your friends this weekend.
Is the movie called Gator or Bad CGI?
It's called Bad CGI Gator. You gotta check it. I did not expect to be talking about this while waxing about Sherlock Holmes, but guys, you gotta see this one. The end of the movie, yeah, like that purple velvety dress, the green floodlights, like she looks like, it looks like this could have been set on Halloween.
Yeah, I honestly think that dress was like a huge inspiration, even though like none of the dresses are quite like it. Movies like this are pure inspiration for Tim Burton because the costumes in Sleepy Hollow are like just as decadent as that dress in the finale of this movie.
I don't know how Watson got into that dress, but he looks great. Okay, so we have not expressed who's wearing the
dress.
Isn't
her name Cecile or something?
Yes, yeah, Cecile. Yeah. She is the daughter of Stapleton, the farmer who we were talking about earlier. He, you know, Sherlock has learned that he is the illegitimate descendant of Hugo Baskerville, and he is next in line. Yeah, that's the villain from the beginning of the movie, Hugo Baskerville. And if he can kill Henry, Christopher Lee's character, then he will amass that fortune. That will be his.
This is like way before DNA, though. Like, how the fuck is he going to prove that? Oh, just by his weird fingers? He's going to be like, ha-ha, I have the signature webbing of the Baskervilles.
That's, yeah, maybe. I mean, I guess you could probably use your lineage, like your family tree. You could probably figure it out.
Yeah, but if you were a secret child at some point, either way, his daughter, Cecile, who's been like getting all hot and heavy with Henry Baskerville.
Honey pot in the Baskerville.
All of a sudden, like, turns and it's like, ha ha, I too am a Baskerville. We are kissing cousins.
Actually, yeah. And like, they've lured him out here. And like, she had basically done the exact same thing to his uncle. Like, all of these guys.
Like, oh, you dumb men. I just kiss you. I don't even have to talk to you.
It's true, though. She doesn't do anything.
No.
Like, it's like she doesn't try. She doesn't want to do anything. Of this, like when he first meets her, she is covered in mud because she was helping Watson escape the mire, and he's like, come now, who are you, what's going on now, better run after you and follow you into the bush for no reason.
And then he goes all the way to her house.
Yeah.
And he's like, hey, so why did you kiss me earlier? And let's kiss again, maybe.
But we are off in the distance still hearing the hound of the Baskerville. Like, we, throughout the movie, have been hearing this wailing from a dog in the distance. And it's like everybody's all spooked out by it because they're all, like, as much as they say they don't believe in it, they clearly can't, you know, fully push out the idea of this curse from their minds.
Well, it's spooky.
It's absolutely spooky.
It's some spooky house.
I'm not saying that they shouldn't. Yeah. I like scary movies.
Like, sure, we got some real bad guys, but, like, maybe they just know the ghost.
And in the climactic finale, the hound shows up. Like, just, we're dealing with guys with daggers. Watson and the other, and Sherlock with little Derringer guns. Basically finger guns. Like, they might as well be walking in with slingshots. But then, yeah, also we have the Hound of the Baskerville has shown up. The Hellhound himself is here and is attacking Henry. And he looks cool.
He's fine.
Oh, what's up? You don't like a dog with a mask?
My favorite part, though, is when, like, everything turns and the farmer is the one that's getting murdered. And then the hound starts walking by him and he, like, grabs the hound. He's like, no, you're attacking me now.
Yeah, yes.
But the hound is essentially, like, the Grinch's dog Max in the Grinch movie.
Sure.
Where he's, like, he's got him barking all evil and it's just, like, a puppy. Like, it's a dog. It looks like a friendly dog.
It looks like a real friendly dog. Even the dogs in the beginning of the movie where they're just like, okay, my killer hounds, let us go murder this girl. They all look super happy to be there.
They look like they're off to go find the missing 100 Dalmatians. Yeah.
What is it, the Scotland Bark? Is that what it's called? Yeah, they all look super happy. The bunch of good little boys, you know, like tails wagging and everything. Total murderers. Yeah, and at the end of the movie, Sherlock takes off this mask that's there to make the
and
dog
it's
look
a dog.
It's a dog.
It was a dog all along.
It's not even like they have the dog in some like wild outfit. It's just like a topper. Like, the dog's basically wearing a New Year's Eve mask that just makes him look like 10% spooky. Yeah, it's just like bigger ears. Nothing to it.
Well, they had to hide the dog's identity.
I think in the book they originally, out of respect for the dog, they had to hide his identity. I think in the book and in the original movies, or at least the earlier adaptations, I think that it was more of like a green fluorescent paint that they had on the dog.
Sounds familiar.
Yeah. And in this, they're like, what if he just had, like, a strong brow? Like, what if he...
What if he just looked like a mean dog?
Yeah, that's basically what they did.
Well, the area where they've chosen for the murder, the definitely haunted abbey,
yes,
has its own fog machine anyways, so they're kind of set for, like, doing any extra work and making it look like a ghost. Like, I could look like a ghost standing there. I'm pale enough.
Yeah.
I can just be like, ah,
yeah, you
beware
just,
the moors.
You just need like a really long dress and just be standing there just like floating back and forth. Like it's like Nightmare Alley.
I bring you love.
That's kind of exactly what I was thinking of. I didn't want to say it. But yeah, like, damn, man, like old sets, like these Hammer horror movies, creeping fog just like rolling in all over the ground looked so good.
It, yeah, no, I love a fog.
Yeah, love a fog.
Love a fog, love a dress, love a suit jacket, love a green floodlight, love Technicolor.
Love Peter Cushing as Sherlock Holmes.
Yeah, and murder stories are great when they add a little bit of supernatural because you know it's not going to be supernatural in the end because you have, you know, an investigator there who's very sus of all of the living human beings and has an actual murder to solve. But it's still fun. It still adds that extra spooky edge.
Totally. I mean, I think that's what made Sleepy Hollow so good when it came out. Because, yeah, like, up until then, you always had a detective who was the only person who could see through the bullshit and wasn't fooled by the curse or the story.
Yeah.
And they were and able to look just at the facts.
The complete opposite, because Ichabod comes to town and he's the spook.
Yeah.
Like, he's the one that's got, like, the weird chemicals and is doing the non-sciencey things.
But he's totally dealing with some Hessian from the afterlife.
Yeah, it's great. It's a little bit of both.
Exactly.
People should wield more curses.
Wield more curses.
And yeah, wield just more ghosts, wield more baddies.
In movies, or are we talking real life?
You're
saying, like, we should all be on TikTok wielding curses?
I just mean, like, you know, in general, making better murders.
Yeah, you know, guys, if you just, like, looking to put a little extra flavor into
2026. We need a little more flair.
Yeah. Oh, man. Yeah, this was a good one. Really enjoyed revisiting this. Love an old Hammer horror movie.
Yeah.
We gotta constantly always trying to watch more old British horror. And we've gotten some like really good recommendations from some people in the Fiend Club and just like listeners of the podcast who live in the UK and know more about this than we do. And like every once in a while, we're able to find one. A lot of the time, it's just because we don't have enough time or because
I know we got to find more ways to like sneak them onto the podcast. The problem is like we got to balance out like these classic ones with, you know, like more modern stuff.
Uh-huh.
Otherwise, people will stop listening to us.
Yeah. I mean, if it were up to me, we would like one of the secret themes would just be blatant and be like, oh, they're all silent films. Like, I would love to do a whole season on silent horror, but nobody's going to listen to that. And yeah, like, you know, we started the podcast talking about, we started the season of the podcast talking about a few newer movies. We're taking a little bit of a detour here to talk about something from the 50s that you maybe already know and love and is, again, another clue to what the season's secret theme is. So far you've got The Boy, you've got The Invisible Man, and you've got The Hound of the Baskerville. If you know what those three movies have in common, you can find a link to submit your prediction for this season's secret theme in the episode description, wherever you're listening to this.
Would you say that this is your favorite Sherlock Holmes story?
That's tough. You know, like your favorite doctor, you know, it's usually your first Sherlock is your favorite. And I was obsessed with Young Sherlock Holmes growing up. Have you seen Young Sherlock Holmes?
No.
Ooh, that's... Oh, you know what my real favorite is?
Wishbone?
The Great Mouse Detective. What are you talking about? That's basically a Sherlock Holmes story.
Mine's Wishbone.
Wishbone's a good choice. Wishbone's a real good choice. But yeah, Young Sherlock Holmes, also great. One of the earliest movies to use CGI, and it looks great. Probably not. I mean, I haven't rewatched it in a long time. But also a good blend of, like, supernatural, scary, possibly supernatural evil happening.
I can't help you out here. I have never seen it.
Oh, it's actually a really, really good movie.
I was more of a Fievel Goes West gal.
Okay. I hated Fievel Goes West. I just didn't like it.
But he goes west.
Yeah, he goes west. You know, like, it's like maybe it was just like the cowboy
I
stuff.
I love the fucking cat.
I didn't love the cat.
The ginger cat with the mustache.
I think it's John Cleese does the voice for that, right?
Really? Okay, well, we were done now. This episode's over.
Oh, rat again. Yeah.
We talked about The Hound of the Baskervilles. If you think you know the secret theme, hit the link in the description. Also, check out our Patreon if you want to come chat with us and hang out in the Fiend Club. There's tons of bonus episodes there. And we have a fun series going on right now where we're talking about movies that we didn't finish. And if we can guess what the story is.
Yeah, we watch 30 minutes, the first 30 minutes of a movie, and then predict how the rest of the movie went down.
And you get to see how good or bad we are at it.
I gotta tell you right now, I think we're gonna be pretty good at it. I mean, we are the one picking the movies. It's not like we were just like, let's watch the first 30 minutes of Mulholland Drive and guess how that ends.
I mean, you could kind of guess a lot of things and maybe not be entirely wrong.
Yeah, that's very true.
It's dreamlike in a way I don't understand.
Yeah, that's, you could say that if I
know. Like, which movie was it?
Yeah, who knows? Anyway, yeah, thank you so much for listening to this week's episode of the podcast. We'll be back again next week with a new movie. And until then, I'm John.
I'm Kimmy.
Stay creepy.
It appears you made it out alive, but we'll get you next time. Help us to grow the horde. Leave a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts or wherever you subscribe. More terror can be found lurking on our website, nofspodcast.com. Until next time, stay creepy, fiends.
Can't believe you don't like Five Equals One.
Yeah, I was never nuts about it. I like that part where he's trying to, like, go down a cave or something, and then there's, like, a giant skeleton that keeps, like, popping up behind him, and when he turns around, the bones go away. Like, I think this is his friend, like, the cat.
Okay, let's be honest here. I don't remember Five Equals One, but I'm gonna defend it.